Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to BSP, Believer Skeptic Podcast.
The podcast where two idiots debate weird phenomena.
I'm Chris. I'm the believer.
I'm Cody. I am the skeptic.
And if this is your first time listening to us, we are an LGBTQ paranormal comedy podcast and proud members of the Podmoth Network.
Yeah, and we are coming at you with a full custom episode. And so this is a little bit...
I should have said that.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, that's okay. And so this is how it works. I'm not sure if anyone from here has actually tuned in before, but we pick a different paranormal topic every other week for our full episodes. And we've done everything ranging from ghosts to certain aspects of religion to just folklore, and we'll share information and fun stories. And then at the end, we do our believer skeptic portion because I am a natural skeptic. I'm like a proof person, and so I don't really believe in that stuff without proof, whereas Chris is more spiritual. Do what?
On the other hand,
yeah,
a spiritual person, because I was brought up in a strangely, religious-filled world, but I had different aspects of everything. I had evangelical on one side, Catholic on the other, all of that, you know. So
yeah, you're Latinx, so you also had La Llorona and a lot of those, you know, kind of Hispanic folklore in your world too, being thrown at you.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it's going to be fun. What did I say? Oh, my. Okay. So every year when we do this, people just orgasm over Chris's whenever he says words in Spanish. And I'm like, La Llorona.
La Llorona. Well, unfortunately, we won't have too much Spanish today because we should probably tell them what our topic is, right?
Yeah, we should. Oh, and also, let me just preface it right now by saying we're typically together whenever we do this. And I think that just works better. But I am actually in Texas right now. We're normally in Phoenix. I'm doing some book events. And so we are remote. And just to warn everybody, I'm staying with a friend. And he has a five-year-old son who is amazingly crazy, but may just barge in or start screaming. There's also a Pac-Man machine right outside my door here. And he loves to play. And sing the theme music. So he'll literally sit there and just be like, la, 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 as he plays Pac-Man. So if y'all hear any of that stuff, please forgive me.
All right. Well, I guess so. With all our disclaimers and disclosures, I guess we should tell you the topic now.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think we should get to the topic.
Let's do it.
So we are doing just... I guess most plainly is ghost light apparitions or spook lights, or, you know, they've come by a bunch of names, which I'll get into in our history, but those mysterious lights that people often see out on bogs or in the distance that are attributed to being ghosts or spirits of some sort.
Yeah, exactly. And what's funny is this kind of originated because there is a phenomenon that actually happened in Phoenix called the Phoenix Lights. Mm-hmm. And we had talked about doing that as an episode because we could bring you something local. But then we decided to save that for an episode of its own. So now it's just ghost lights elsewhere. But I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And there's a lot of spooky, unexplained lights out there. So I think it's really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. So with that, should we get into drinks?
Yeah. So for every episode, we do a themed drink. Or food or anything that we want to share that kind of goes with the topic. So who wants to go first?
I'll go first, just so I can explain. For me, it's been a little more challenging as of late because I don't drink alcohol anymore, but I've been pretty damn creative. And Total Wine actually carries a lot of amazing non-alcoholic liquor now. So I am drinking what is called Brooklyn Special Effects. And the reason I picked that is one of the theories or explanations for the spook lights have been that they are just simply some kind of special effect or, you know, theatricals. So that's my explanation for my drink.
Interesting. That sounds really good. Yeah. For people who don't listen, we have kind of reputations where Chris is known to pull organic herbs from his garden and muddle up a concoction for his drink, whereas I will pick up a can out of a Circle K parking lot of beer and bring it in and rationalize it somehow. So that whenever you're like, mine are usually amazing. they really are. So,
and by the way, it just says hoppy brew. It doesn't say what specific kind, but it's non-alcoholic hoppy brew, and it tastes pretty good.
It's pretty good. Oh, cool. The can, because we're on video, no one else can see it. But it's really pretty. All right. Yeah. So whenever I did mine, Chris knows me, and he actually sent me a message, and he was like, you better not bring Bud Light. And there are some right there in the fridge, so you ruined what I was going to do. So I went ahead, and I got fancier, and instead, I got Coors Light.
Gross.
No, I'm just kidding, I didn't.
I was like, you are in Texas, after all, so there is that.
That's true. Well, so what I got was, if you think about what is the ultimate source of light in our world.
The sun?
Yep. I actually found a California Chardonnay called Sea Sun. And so it actually has the sun in it. So suck it, Chris. I got a good one this time.
Oh, whatever. You should have gotten Sun Brew. That's the beer. You would actually drink that. You don't even like Chardonnay.
I know, but I'm just going to drink it from the bottle because I'm classy. So while I get this going, did you want to share some history?
Sure. Ghost light apparitions at their most basic are mysterious lights, or in some cases flames, that appear and or disappear without any obvious cause for them. They mostly appear in yellow or white, but have also been seen in red, blue, and orange. These entities are said to look like a low hovering orb of light that have been known to recede when approached, and in some cases can lead travelers from danger. They have been called in Latin an ignis fatuus, also called will of the wisp, hinky punk, and sometimes wander lights, just to name a few things. In fact, you may have heard about some such stories in some of our previous episodes if you've listened to us before. Cody has talked both about the Marfa lights and the Fifalet previously, those are both examples of these encounters as well.
Yeah, and I actually forgot that I talked about the Fifalet, and I didn't tell you this, Chris. I actually was going to do them, and I started researching, and I was like, why is this so familiar? But yeah.
I'm glad you didn't.
Mm-hmm. Someone just mentioned don't forget St. Elmo's fire.
Oh, I was going to. I'm not there yet.
Oh. Thank you for bringing that. Oh. Hey, thanks, Seder.
Yeah. There are stories and experiences such as apparitions from across the world. I found cases from Japan, Australia, Thailand, the Netherlands, Canada, and here in the U.S. Although not necessarily always the case, these encounters usually occur in humid climates, more so in or around swampy land, and even more often in graveyards and or graves. Explanations and theories for these types of ghost lights are about as far spread across the world. In Japan, they are often explained by certain types of yokai. And if you're new to us and don't know what yokai are, might I suggest our Japanese folklore episode, because believe me, you won't be disappointed.
Y'all, you're gonna find ghosts that disguise themselves as brooms and try to get cleaned. Like, it was ridiculous. It was a lot of fun, that episode.
Yeah. So in Ireland, they might be explained by fairies, and in many places along the railroad it is often explained as an oncoming train light. And of course, my old faithful explanation that I often joke about for anything and everything paranormal: UFOs, UAPs, and or aliens.
And that means the Star Trek's picture that he posted with the alien is perfect. I forgot about you and aliens with that. I didn't even think about that, but now it makes sense.
Yeah. Well, in some cultures, people see these lights as harbingers of death, while in other cultures, there's belief that these lights are pointing people to potential buried treasure. Some cases, of course, have been explained scientifically by things such as flammable gas, ball lightning, meteors, and so on. An example of that is St. Elmo's Fire, which, much to my surprise, is not just a 1980s coming-of-age movie starring Rob Lowe, but Anyways, what is the fun in describing the scientific theories? Because we are a paranormal podcast, after all.
Yeah.
So according to the Ghost Research Society, there are five characteristics that define what they call, quote, ghost lights. One, they appear in remote areas. Two, they are elusive and can be seen from different angles and distances. Three, they react to noise or light by receding or disappearing. Four, they are accompanied by hummings, buzzings, or outbreaks of gaseous materials. And five, they are associated with folklore surrounding a haunting because of an accident or tragedy.
Ah, cool. That's interesting.
Yeah. So as I said earlier, these lights are sometimes called will-o'-the-wisp, which not only describes the light, but also is a metaphor describing a hope, wish, or goal that is impossible to reach, or something that someone finds perplexing, much like Don Quixote's impossible dream, or the often used idiom, reaching for the brass ring. In literature, we encounter this usage in Milton's Paradise Lost, Goethe's The Green Snake and the Beautiful Lily, in Emily Dickinson's Those Dying Then, and in Bram Stoker's Dracula, just to name a few famous examples. So what are these mysterious lights that many have claimed to see across the world? Perhaps we can answer the question today, but knowing us, probably not.
That is fair.
And there you have it, the history of atmospheric ghost lights.
And Chris, did you actually refer to him as Robert Lowe?
Rob Lowe.
Oh, I thought you actually said Robert Lowe. And I was like, who is that?
We're on a full name basis. You should know this.
Right? Yeah. Oh, Robert. Well, that is super fascinating. And this is going to be some fun overlap. So I'm going to be sharing the first story here. And I am actually going to be talking about will-o'-wisps. And okay, y'all, you have to forgive me that I actually learned at the end of my research for this that will-o'-wisps are actually just another name for ghost lights. And I was like, ugh! But I actually found some really cool information on the English version, which is where the actual word or term will-o'-the-wisp came from. So I think it's going to be cool. Wait,
and Cody, not to be that guy, but I am going to be that guy. It's will-o'-the-wisp. It's like will of the wisp.
Okay, so let me read the first sentence of my story. Okay, y'all. So first of all, they're actually called will-o'-the-wisps. So thanks for setting me up right there. Yeah, I'm so used to just calling will-o'-wisps that that's my fast way, but they are actually called will-o'-the-wisps. And I thought that was weird, but did you know
that... Can you do an Irish accent for us?
Yes. Oh, Chris, okay, I'm the worst at accents, and he makes fun of me. Okay. Oh, will-o'-the-wisp now. Is that it? Was that good?
No, at all.
Am I Irish?
You just offended a whole country.
I didn't mean to. I'm trying. Okay, so anyway, enough fun poking. Also, in the same way that they're called will-o'-the-wisps, did you know that jack-o'-lanterns are actually called Jack-o'-the-lantern? That's their real name.
Yes, I did know that.
Oh, I didn't. But also, I have to point out that the part that really blew me away, that will-o'-the-wisps are actually named after a guy named Will. So when you think it's super special, what? That is literally just his name. So if his name was Steve, these would be called Steve-o'-the-wisps. Steve-o'-the-wisps. And to make it even more disillusioning, where it's less scary, the guy's last name is Smith. His name is Will Smith from centuries ago. And I am not kidding. Oh,
Will
God.
Smith.
It's Will Smith. God. That's the lore is around Will Smith. So now this whole episode is like not scary. But anyway, a little bit of information. So a will-o'-the-wisp is an atmospheric ghost light or flame seen by travelers at night, especially over bogs, swamps, or marshes, as Chris said. The light slash flame, though, interestingly, is not hot enough to produce any perception of warmth. And I thought that was actually really cool. So you're not going to get any heat from them. Now, as
so
Chris said again,
it's not a source necessarily, it's just a guiding light.
Yeah, exactly.
For a better term. Yeah.
That's exactly right. And sometimes the lights are static, floating above the ground. Sometimes they move away due to sound or to movement. They've been known to travel at super high speeds at times. They can be a whole bunch of different colors. Some of it depends on where you actually see them. Now, will-o'-the-wisps are old. So Will Smith is fucking ancient. They actually appear in Europe's written record around the 13th century. But their legend was well known all across the world long before pen was even put to paper. So offhand, you're like, well, if you're just seeing a light, you know, is there anything paranormal about that? But they are very paranormal, and the stories about them, I wrote abound, but I don't even know if that's the correct word. So we're just going to skip right over that. Now, while this seems harmless, you know, like just seeing a light, will-o'-the-wisps are almost always malevolent. And why? Well, that takes us to our backstory, which sheds some light on their cruel nature. And this is pretty crazy. So the classic will-o'-the-wisps origin story is carried by a blacksmith named Will Smith. Will Smith was such a troublemaker that when he, Will Smith, died and went to heaven, he was sent back by St. Peter, who told him to reform during his second life. Well, unfortunately, Will Smith is an asshole, and his second life was even more monstrous than his first life, so St. Peter cursed him to roam the earth forever. Now, the devil was, you know, sitting there, and he's all impressed by Will Smith's evil doing, and so he gave him a coal to warm himself on the cold earth nights. But instead,
did you say a coal?
A coal, like C-O-A-L, like a hot coal.
I thought you said a pole at first.
A stripper pole to warm himself. And not Cole Sprouse either to warm himself. I'm talking about a piece hot. Of coal. Did you just say hot?
Yes.
Okay. I'm just picturing him on Sweet Life, and I was like, ew, but then I forget that he's an actual adult now.
Yeah, I'm picturing him in Riverdale.
Oh, sure. Okay, he's that makes sense. Man. I mean, I heard the name before we came on of Pod Cubs, and I was like, ooh, now that sounds like that's up my alley, but I digress. So anyway, so the devil is actually being nice, and devil's like, hey, Will Smith, I'm impressed by all your evil doing, so here's some coal to warm yourself. Well, instead, Will becomes even worse than the devil, and he decides to use the coal to make a torch to lure innocent travelers into danger. So basically, Will Smith is a little bitch. I see that Will Smith has a hot pole in the message, and I'm going to skip right over that. But I actually found it interesting that God or Jesus never got involved in this. You know, he's basically like, hey, Peter, you know, you got this. But so with all that awful backstory, Peter, Paul, and Mary. So the will-o'-the-wisps, I don't even know. That was the dumbest thing. So will-o'-the-wisps are meant to confuse people, make them lose their bearings, and may even lead to drowning or falling to your death if you decide to follow them moving over the marshes or canyons or whatever you see them. So basically, they're leading you someplace dangerous where you either can't find your way back or you fall and drown or die. Now, so with that said, here's a common story about the will-o'-the-wisp. And also, typing will-o'-the-wisp over and over really, really sucked. So anyway, a peasant traveling home at dusk sees a bright light traveling alone ahead of him. Looking closer, he sees that the light is a lantern held by a dusky little figure, which he follows for several miles. All of a sudden, he finds himself standing on the edge of a vast chasm with a rushing torrent of water below him. At that precise moment, the lantern carrier leaps across the gap, lifts the light high over its head, lets out a malicious laugh, and blows out the light, leaving the poor peasant a long way from home, standing in pitch darkness at the edge of a precipice. So, with all that said, why the hell would you ever follow one? Well, some of the stories say that the will-o'-the-wisp sometimes appears to show people their intended path in life, which I probably don't want to see because I'm so far from that, it would be depressing. But they could also reveal the spot where Chris, or a leprechaun has buried treasure. So basically, you have a 50-50 shot of going to your doom or ending up rich. And so that's where I'm actually posing a question to Chris and the chat. One, if you saw a light there, you saw a ghost light, and you know it could lead you to treasure and riches or your death, would you follow it? Number two, if not, what if it led to some really good dick or a really good rim job? Like, then would you follow it? Or three, if not, what would it take to make you follow that to either get death or something amazing? So, Chris, what's your answer there?
Well, first of all, you know what it would take for me to get there. It'd be a tall, skinny white man, you know?
Jake Gyllenhaal appears. You're following him no matter what.
Absolutely, 100%.
All right. That's fair. Huh. So I guess then for me, if James Corden was floating in the Will-O-The-Wisp, I'd be like, come here, please. All right. And if you see, I just saw something about I'd trade my soul for a quality rim job. Yes. All right.
Well, Cody's given rim jobs for less, so you can ask him.
Oh, shit. Okay. All right. That was well done. That was well done. I'm like, Thai food? Okay, here's your rim job. So with all that said, then again, how can you fight the Will-O-The-Wisp? Well, some say that
iron.
I always say iron. It's the kryptonite of them. So throwing like an iron knife or something at the light can dispel it or dissipate it so you can be safe. So that's actually something that's really cool. Now, with that said, I was going to talk like about the fact that they've actually been around in countries all over the world. And there's actually some really, really, really fascinating examples or different folklore from where these come from in different countries. But I'm actually going to stop that now for the sake of time. But if y'all want to know more, go look at Erblas, which is in the Netherlands, and Leia in Asia, and some of the other incarnations of ghost lights or the Will-O-The-Wisp, because they're super, super fascinating. And that is some stories of the Will-O-The-Wisp.
Awesome. Well, thank you for that, Cody. And that will lead me to a next version of the Will-O-The-Wisp. For my first story, I'm covering a version of the legend that goes by the name of corpse lights from the country of Wales, as well as something connected to it, phantom funerals. As within so many traditions, when a starless night comes and the howling of wind is the only thing one can hear, sometimes the rattling of rain, the people of Wales gather around the fire to tell tales made to frighten, intrigue, and enthrall. Among these stories, one can be sure to hear at least one about corpse candles or phantom funerals. There are said to be a dozen variations of such stories from Wales and Ireland, most of which originate in the 17th to the early 19th centuries. So there will be some overlap here with Cody's information as well. The Welsh were one of the cultures that believed these lights were harbingers of death. These small, faint lights were often said to be flickering slightly above the ground close to the home of the person who was dying. Or in some cases, they would be seen along the road leading to the person's next destination, such as a graveyard, a church, a hospital, or so on. And in other cases, it was said that a person who saw the lights would themselves encounter death.
Oh, so this is a literal harbinger of death.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Or if you're on your deathbed, you know, already kind of thing, so... these legends spread quickly through Wales, with people saying they would see the corpse candles traveling in a straight line called phantom funerals, said to foretell the funeral about to take place, and were said sometimes to be accompanied by the sound of muffled sobbing or shuffling of feet in the procession.
Oh, that's creepy. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
No, hell no. These lights would travel through anything on their path, through hills, trees, whatever, still maintaining a straight line. In some versions of the legend, it was said that the corpse candle was followed by a hollow skull, which even more creepy.
Wait, so this is just floating along with the candles, just this skull?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, wow. Okay, you just go touch it?
I don't know. I guess you could. I've never seen one. I have no idea.
Okay, I'm just curious. Okay, sorry. Continue.
In yet other versions of the story, people said that the age and gender of the person about to die could be told by the size and color of the corpse candle. For example, a large red light was meant to target an adult male, while a large white light was meant for an adult woman. Small blue lights indicated youth, while more intense blue lights indicated an infant. And sadly, if two lights were encountered, that this was supposed to indicate that an adult female and her unborn would die.
Oh, I was about to make some jokes, but now I can't. Oh my gosh, that's sad.
Yeah. So many of these stories came long before the industrialization of Wales, and once industrialized, many of these legends too began to fade, but are still told to this day by believers and skeptics alike. So let me add to this story. As some of you know, I grew up in New Mexico, far, far from the roads of Wales, but my research triggered a memory, something I don't even think Cody has heard of.
I was literally about to be like, what? Okay.
Yeah. This is not my personal experience, but something I heard from my mom and was, from what I remember, confirmed by my grandma as well. Anyhow, my mom once told me that when she was a kid, she remembered that one evening someone she knew died or was on their deathbed. She then said that she was able to see a line of lights that led from the person's house to the graveyard, which couldn't be explained.
Well, and she would have known nothing about the funeral lights, would she? Or did she know about them?
No, she didn't.
That's unbelievable, Chris.
Yeah. In remembering this story, I actually text my brother about his memory about it. And he says, in what he remembers, our mom said that when her cousin died, she later saw two lights in the tree near her home. And from what I remember, there was belief that her cousin was bewitched or cursed, which in turn made them believe that these lights were either the cousin or the witches who had been cursed, you know, who had been cursing the cousin.
Oh, my God, Chris, that's unbelievable.
And there you have it. Corpse lights and phantom funerals.
Wow. Man, whenever I die, there's literally going to be like a line of glowing dildos, like all moving to my grave.
As much Thai food as you have, we're going to have like a release of those balls into the air, the ball lights.
The balls of gas from all the Thai food.
I didn't mean that. I mean the paper lanterns.
I think both are fair. Wow. Well, that is absolutely fascinating. Yeah. Okay. So for my second story, I'm going to be taking everyone down to Australia, and I'm going to be talking about the ghost lights of the outback, or the Min Min lights.
Down under?
I'm taking everyone down under. I've seen all these comments about rim jobs, so now I'm getting turned on. This one's actually really interesting, and I like this one because these are ones that people are actually still seeing today, and there's actually pictures and evidence of them. So these really do exist. Okay. So out over the harsh terrain of the outback of Western Australia, I'm doing my accent, there once existed a town. There once existed a town called Min Min, now desiccated ruins, and the article said, like the remains of some prehistoric beast. It is here among these ruins where a curious phenomenon has long been witnessed by those passing through. Strange, inexplicable ghost lights that bob and hover across this land, and which are steeped in so many crazy stories. So what have come to be called the Min Min lights are typically described as shimmering orbs that can range in color. And it's a lot of what Chris said and we've talked about, but I want to go ahead and read this because it's funny. Because the article said these can range in color, including, and let's count, blue, white, green, red, and yellow, sometimes changing between all three. So it actually lists five colors and then says it can change between the three. So math is not this writer's strong suit. Like the other ghost lights we've talked about, they can be slow, they can be super fast, they can just hover, they can actually break off into different lights. But one thing that's interesting is that many reports claim that they evoke thick feelings of dread or confusion, leaving the witnesses quite unsettled, which is really strange. Now, considering how mysterious they are, it's not surprising they've attracted tons of lore. Now, the Aborigines believe them to be spirits of their ancestors roaming the land. And then when white settlers began sighting the lights in 1918, they actually spawned legends.
Colonizers.
Yeah, the colonizers, the colonizing assholes who were like, we know better, and they're asses. They spawned legends that were connected to the old hotel that once stood there. And according to that legend, the owners of the hotel actually murdered rich guests for their valuables, after which the bodies would be just dumped into shallow graves in a patch of land nearby. And so in that tale, the Min Min lights are the vengeful ghosts of these victims, and they seek to confuse travelers and get them lost in the outback because of their anger and their vengeance that they want. Now, isn't that crazy?
Mm-hmm.
So some of the earliest published reports of Min Min light sightings originate in the 1930s. So here we actually start getting people writing their accounts. And one of these earliest published encounters is actually a pretty scary one where the Min Min Light really fulfilled the purpose of a Will-O-The-Wisp. So this encounter was written by a newspaper columnist named Billy Bo-Yang. He claimed that one evening from their camp, he and his companions saw an odd light bobbing and weaving out in the cold desert. Well, they decided to follow it, and here are his words. And the outback is the best place for sex. I just read that. I kind of want more information on that. And just so you know, that was not Bill Bo-Yang's words. That was mine. So what Bill said was, "I strode on into the darkness. I had got to within perhaps 20 yards of the peculiar light, which was still hovering like some huge glowing ball of embers in midair about 7 or 8 feet from the ground, when suddenly it swerved abruptly to one side. A man's warning voice came through the darkness saying, 'The abyss ain't a dozen yards from where ye are. Come back.' I stopped, but not before I had seen, true to the old fellow's words, that the strange light had indeed drifted out over a great chasm. As I watched, the light hesitated, floated back a little towards me, then as though tempting me to follow, but at the same time annoyed at the possibility of losing a victim, it glided back again over the chasm where, with a few final erratic moments, it dropped from sight."
Wow.
Yeah, and he actually like wrote this. I like how many emotions he gave to this ball of light. He's like, he was annoyed, and then I saw anger and emotion in him. So he's like Arnold Schwarzenegger in Batman and Robin. So I thought that was a really cool story, and it actually was trying to lure him to his death. And I'm not even sure he would have known about all of the Will-O-The-Wisp legends, you know, kind of being there in the outback in the 30s. So I thought that was really cool. Well, over the years, there have been hundreds of sightings of Min Min lights, and the strange phenomenon continues to this day, sparking so much speculation as to what they might be. Now, there are, of course, scientific explanations, but, and Chris, this this could be part of your believer, but according to some articles...
Oh, thanks for giving me that information now.
I told you yesterday that I found some stuff.
But you didn't send it to me. You just told me.
Because I thought it would be more fun to read it on the air right now. So there are all these scientific explanations, but according to some articles, none of them fully explain all the idiosyncrasies of Min Min Light reports, such as the seemingly intelligent nature they demonstrate, ghostly voices, or that profound fear I talked about that they regenerate. And so in the end, these articles claim that the phenomenon has never conclusively been solved and it is paranormal. And that is the story of the Min Min Lights.
Wow, that is really cool. And you know me and my feelings on the indigenous community. So knowing that this story comes from the Aboriginal people is really cool as well.
So. Yeah, I like that they had their roots. Yeah, so I thought that was fascinating. All right, so what do you got for our last one?
For my second story, I bring us back to the United States, to North Carolina specifically. This story is a little longer, so bear with me. I'm talking about the Brown Mountain Lights.
Brown Mountain?
I know. That sounds so dirty.
Right.
Brown Mountain is located in western North Carolina in the Pisgah National Forest near Morganton. When you see these mountains, there seems to be nothing too special about them, but it has been what has appeared in these mountains for hundreds of years that have kept people mystified. There have been sightings of what are now known as the Brown Mountain Lights. Some of the oldest references of the lights go back to around 1910, but stories and appearances go back many more years. One legend goes back as far back as 1200 AD.
Wow.
It's in a rendition of the legend told by the Cherokee tribe. According to them, the lights that are seen here are the spirits of maidens who had come to the mountain in search of their lost lovers who were killed in battle. Another legend surrounding the Brown Mountain Lights come from around 1850, when a woman in the community had been murdered, which was alleged to have been done by her husband. Following her disappearance, a search party was sent out. While on the search, people noticed an appearance of light, which they believed was the spirit of the murdered woman who had come back to avenge her death and warn searchers about being in that area. It was said that many years following her disappearance, bones were found under a cliff near Brown Mountain, supposedly identified as the missing woman.
Wait, so bones were actually found?
Eventually, yes.
Wow.
So, the most famous legend of the area has to do with a man called Josiah Lafayette Wiseman, who was also called Fate. This legend is a Wiseman family tale that says that sometime in the mid-1800s, Fate Wiseman happened to be camping with his father when he saw an unfamiliar light in the distance. And from that day forward, or night rather, Wiseman said that he would see the same light in the same place at almost the same time every night. This legend would be popularized by Fate's great nephew, Scotty Wiseman, through a song he published in 1961 called The Legend of the Brown Mountain Lights. It has been said that the sightings of these mysterious lights were so frequent that in 1922, the U.S. Geological Survey launched an investigation sending a scientist to find answers.
Oh, cool.
Unfortunately, the research proved inconclusive, saying the lights had become widespread with the first house lights and electricity spreading in the area for the first time. So, in 1982, an observer claimed to have gotten close enough to one of the lights to actually touch it,
saying
that it felt like he had stuck his finger in electric socket.
Wait, he actually, that is unbelievable. Really?
Yeah. Supposedly. Yeah. Allegedly.
Supposedly.
People have claimed to be chased by the lights, but for most of the part, the lights just float out in the distance without much movement. And here, just 11 years ago, I have a story on one encounter. The writer says, "My first trip to Brown Mountain was at mile marker 310 on the Blue Ridge Parkway. It was in the late spring of this year, 2010. The trees had bloomed too big to see the mountain much, so Dustin and I stayed and gazed upon the night sky. An electrical storm hit the Brown Mountain the entire time I was there, which was near 3 hours, give or take a bit. Two lights that looked like stars were moving in the sky above us. They were parallel to one another and moved at the same speed. They made no noise and moved fast. They disappeared, though, into the night sky. A few moments after they disappeared from our vision, another light to our right appeared in the sky. It flashed bright and poof, it was gone. Seeing those two lights move next to each other the way they did was interesting, and it definitely sparked my interest of the Brown Mountain legends.
Oh, nice pun.
A few weeks later, I was told about another overlook. It is no doubt an overlook that has been promising to my belief of the paranormal there at Brown Mountain. It's located on Highway 181 near Morganton, North Carolina. The view is amazing, and the senses I've experienced there have been wonderful. Another electrical storm was hitting Brown Mountain as myself, Dustin, April, and Jeffrey arrived on June 19th. The lightning was bolting from the magnificent clouds that were blazing pink, red, orange, and yellow colors from the sunset. Tina came to join the team just in time. It was still daylight, but a couple bright balls of light had already appeared on the ridgeline of Brown Mountain. They were great. I was so excited. The lights were showing up on the video camera. To get evidence as we got that night, it's one incredible thing to have. Lights kept appearing in different colors and different sizes. Some made the formations of a trapezoid, then into a parallelogram. Some were in the formation of a triangle and some in a circle. Lights sped across the ridgeline and continued to blink off and on and shine so bright for us to view. Many people came and went to the overlook. Most didn't realize the lights we're seeing were of the legends. I'm sure people left that scene, the lights, but thought they were a town. I thought the lights were a town too, until I saw a big bright ball of light fly across the ridgeline of Brown Mountain for a long time. I did not see the light the first night though, nor the second. But the third visit, something in the night sky flew over my friends and I that night. None of us saw what made the noise flying over our head, but we all knew it was big. Tina had a feather appear in her vehicle's passenger seat while she was viewing the lights. Dustin and I have heard a raspy voice from the thicket. The voice was heard on our third visit to the overlook, and it seemed like it said to us, "Why are you bothering me?"
A feather appeared in her car?
Yeah.
Just like a bird, like a vulture feather or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, that is wild. Well, actually, I guess I could just say a wind blew it inside, but still, that's weird.
Yeah, and then it said, "What?" Interesting, eh? Indeed, I do not think these lights are swamp gas, as some would think. I do not think they are Native American spirit maidens looking for their loved ones either. Perhaps they have had something to do with what's out of this world, such as space, UFO, aliens. Perhaps there are many earthly spirits dancing about. It did seem that these electrical storm made them more apparent, more abundant. My third time there, the moon was a very bright and full. The lights were similar and not as bright. Before it was dark on my third visit, I watched a ball of light fly down the daylight sky. Dustin said it was a meteorite. Maybe it was. I'm still not sure, but I know I heard something hit the ground after I saw it fly in the sky. I wish I could find what hit, but the thicket that it fell into would be almost impossible. I know we will continue to seek into the unknown of the Brown Mountain lights. I hope to get a new video recorder soon to catch these lights digitally instead of through the high 8 tapes like I am using now for evidence. If not been to Brown Mountain, you should try and make the trip one night. Maybe you'll find them fascinating too. And there you have it, the Brown Mountain lights, which being around hundreds of years old, still cause discussion and debate.
Wow.
So what are these mysterious entities that so many claim to see at Brown Mountain? We probably will never know.
That is crazy. Oh, God, there's just so many. Like, okay, so everyone talk about your first trip to Brown Mountain. And now that's going to be my name for my ass. No, like, yeah, like rimming the Brown Mountain. Oh, God. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, my God.
That is
Brown Mountain Ridge.
Someone actually said in chat, Brown Mountain, like M-O-U-T-I-N, like mountain someone. And I thought that was really appropriate. So well done. So now we're on to believer skeptic.
Absolutely.
All right, cool. So for skeptic, I mean, I admit that I think that there are definitely scientific explanations for all of this. I did talk about some of this in our FIFA-Lay episode, but then I also found just one article just randomly threw something out that actually made a lot of sense. So I'm going to say that too. But first, scientists believe that the light is produced by a type of bioluminescent fungus or algae in some places, especially in marshy areas. Just like fireflies or anglerfish, these plants could undergo a unique chemical process to produce light. So that's one explanation. Still,
yeah,
in the
Maldives, that like part of the ocean that's all bioluminescent.
Yeah, exactly. These creatures evolved to be able to survive, and that's part of their evolution. And so that could, of course, explain why you're seeing these balls of light. Other scientists, and this is something that Chris had mentioned, that they say that a mixture of gases, not from Thai food, is responsible for the lights. And there's a whole description here about methane and carbon dioxide and stuff, but it's really nerdy and boring. So I'm just going to say that chemicals combine, and some of them are combustible, so they can produce this burning ball of light hovering above a marsh. But here's the thing, is that a lot of believers say that these ancient reports vary so greatly that scientific reasons don't explain it. You know, like some people say that it's really bright. Some people say that it's super dim and the different colors. Well, one article said one sentence that I was like, oh, that's really interesting. And that sentence was, people back then didn't have glasses. And I was like, oh, that's actually an interesting theory, right? It sounds stupid, but I'm so blindy and everything's a blur without my glasses. So if I existed back then, like, you know, whenever Chris was a child back in the 13 or 1400s, I wouldn't, like, I would, what I see would be very different than what you saw or that someone with better eyesight would see. You also have to take into account color blindness, which could, you know, back then could account why some people are seeing different colors or what they're doing. So I think that there are sometimes, you know, there are scientific explanations, and then sometimes there's these more common sense reasons for it about why you see these or why they appear to be different. And then we've talked about this before, that article that said that they evoke this feeling of fear inside of you. Like, how do you explain that? But we've done studies before that show whenever people's senses are already heightened and they're already afraid of something, that it's almost like an evolutionary process where you're built for survival. And it's better for you to overreact to something than to underreact, because you don't want to take any chances. And so that way, overreacting means you start imagining things. You start, it evokes fear where there seems to be no fear present. So that's what I think is explaining that portion of it. And that is a short, but I think effective believer, or not believer, but skeptic for the ghost lights.
Yeah, that's, yeah, totally. No, that makes sense. And, but these ghosts, but these ghostly light apparitions, are they things of fact or merely fiction? Well, as I said earlier, it seems that encounters with these entities happen almost everywhere across the world. Not only that, sightings have been going on for hundreds of years to merely just call it coincidence, I think. Do I believe that there are harbingers of death? I somehow doubt that. That being said, of all the theories I have read about with these entities, of what these entities are, I would have to say the one I go with is actually train lights, like for real.
Huh. How
so? Well, I didn't mention this in history, but it has been noted that a lot of these experiences or where these lights are seen are in boggy, swampy, liquid-filled areas. I guess I did mention that a little bit. And a lot of trains have no choice but to travel in remote areas. So before electricity was invented, these trains would probably be seen in the darkest of night from miles away, giving this illusion of these spooky lights. Then as electricity was invented, these stories faded away as the world got, quote-unquote, brighter. So that being said, when electricity was dim or faulty, what better way to celebrate than by telling scary stories of things that used to scare you pre-electricity? So with that, these stories became tradition, and that is my own theory.
Oh, so you mean trains as in choo-choo, not a train of lights.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, so you're that means you're a skeptic, because instead of believing in the spiritual aspect, you think that there's a scientific explanation.
Absolutely. I think it all has to do with industrialization and electricity being invented.
Interesting. Well, I'm curious to know if people want to put in chat, like if they actually think that this is paranormal, or if they think that this is scientific. All right. So are we on to, do we have time for a creep of the week?
Yeah, we have 9 minutes left. So I'll go ahead and get into the creep of the week. For those of you not familiar, this segment we call creep of the week, in which we tell a listener story. We have not read this before, so it'll be a surprise for all of us. But I know part of it is appropriate, especially for Pride 48. And that's why I picked it. So here we go.
Yeah.
Hi, guys. First, I love the show. I discovered your podcast a few months ago and was immediately hooked.
Oh, yay.
You guys are crazy talented, so funny, and I love the topics you choose. So thank you for all your hard work and passion. I have had a lot of experiences in my life, but I wanted to share one with you that scared the crap out of me. My family and I were living in Dublin, Ireland. My husband is a foreign service officer and was posted to our embassy there. In 2009, I planned a romantic getaway for Valentine's Day and booked a room at Ballygally Castle, a castle-turned-hotel on the coast of Antrim in Northern Ireland. It's a beautiful castle with quite a past. Perhaps the most famous story from Ballygally is the Lady Isobel Shaw, who was locked in the castle tower by her husband and who either fell or jumped to her death from the tower window. The castle is said to have several ghosts, Isobel's among them. Our first night in Ballygally, after a lovely day of sightseeing and dinner in the hotel restaurant, I was tossing and turning and just kept feeling like someone was watching me. The next morning, hubby and I were chatting over breakfast, and my husband, very much a skeptic despite the fact that he grew up in a house that is haunted as fuck, said he felt like something was off in the room. I wasn't sure if I felt relieved to have been validated or frightened, knowing that it wasn't just me. You could chalk it up to us knowing the hotel was said to be haunted, but we'd been in lots of places that were haunted. And while I've had some frightening experience, I'd never quite felt so unsettled. Despite the lack of sleep, we had another lovely day on the coast, followed by another scrumptious dinner in the restaurant. Fast forward to sometime in the middle of the night, I was sleeping on my side near the edge of the bed. I woke up with a start, almost the way you would if someone shook you awake. My eyes shot open, and I swear to fuck, there was a woman leaning over me, her face inches from mine.
Oh!
She was pale and disheveled. Her dark hair was a mess, like it hadn't been brushed in forever. And she was wearing a long white nightgown. I gasped, flung myself across the bed, and burrowed under the covers, pressed against my sleeping husband. I have no idea if she stuck around because no fucking way was I going to peek over the covers to look. I parasited against my husband and eventually fell back asleep. I assumed that whatever I saw, spirit, ghost, residual haunting, I don't know, was Lady Isabel, but she's said to knock on doors, and I haven't found anything about her scaring the crap out of guests. So who knows? All I know is that I was not asleep. That was not paralysis, and she looked as real as you or me. So that's my experience in Ballygolly Castle. Because of my husband's job, we've lived in several countries, and I and two of our three children have had experiences in all but one of them. So I have a lot more experience if you're interested in hearing any of them.
Yeah, we are.
Thank you so much for what you do. I love listening to you guys. You're beyond awesome. And as the mother of a queer child, I am deeply grateful on a different level because, as she often says to me, representation matters. So thank you. Best, Heather.
Oh, yay. Oh, okay. I definitely want more information there. And I'd love to even send her children some books. I think that would be really nice.
Yeah. And there's a postscript. I've never seen Hamilton, but when you guys sang one of those songs from it, I cried. You sang it so beautifully.
Oh, that's so nice. Oh, blushing. Yeah. I love that she used the word parasited myself against my husband. Like, what a perfect word to illustrate her just grabbing and clinging on to him, like, you know, literally for dear life. I think that was such an amazing use of word. You should be a writer. That's awesome.
Yeah. So, well, guys, thank you. That was amazing. Thank you, Pride 48, again, for having us again this year. We're super happy and glad to be here again. And we're actually on a break right now, but we have new episodes that will be starting here in a couple of weeks. We're opening with our 100th episode and our beginning of our fifth year. If you haven't already, you can subscribe to us on all podcatchers, wherever you find podcasts at BSPod PHX, or just searching the podcast. If you have any stories like the last one we read, you can send either an email or a voice memo to BSPodPHX@gmail.com.
Yeah, and just so that's, because we're in Phoenix, that's kind of the reason why it's BSPod PHX. I'm saying that really clearly, Chris, because it sounds like at least one person is talking about sharing some stories, and we would love to hear some of that. Oh, thank you, Seda, for subscribing. That's awesome. So, and as I mentioned briefly at the beginning, I'm actually an LGBTQ author. I have a series out. It's actually a trilogy called The Gay Teen's Guide to Defeating a Siren. I'm about a teenager who comes out of the closet. His parents drag him off to this horrible Pray Away the Gay conversion therapy boarding school. But when the parents leave, the school reveals it's actually a secret refuge for gay teens, and he gets to go to a secret LGBTQ high school. There's also a fantasy element involved, as I love fantasy. And so that trilogy is out. If you look on Amazon under my name or the name of the series, The Gay Teen's Guide to Defeating a Siren, it's the first thing that comes up. It makes great gifts, and if you're a reader, I can't actually say they're good because that feels weird. Other people can say they're good. But if you're interested in that kind of fiction, feel free to check them out.
And I actually am posting a link in the chat to where you can get the first book, and you can find the rest from there. And I've read them, so I think everybody else should as well.
Oh, thanks, Chris. Oh, that's so nice. Oh, and putting, like, talk about common sense, you actually put the email address in the chat. And instead of doing that, I'm sitting here trying to, like, spell it out. I think that was a much, much smarter way to do that. That's why I say we're two idiots debating weird phenomena. So that was actually really fun. Like, so what did you think of the episode? That was really cool.
I thought that was great. A lot of information that I did not know about before that, who knows? It's still a mystery, and I think it always will be.
Yep. And I love whenever we cover topics that you can actually see the phenomena. You know, that's my favorite thing, whenever it's actually there. So you have to discuss how or what it could be versus whenever you have, you know, some topics like some hauntings or ghosts where, you know, it's all just hearsay. I prefer stuff like this.
Yeah. And if you all want to see any of those pictures and stuff, follow us on Instagram as well. The same place, BSPodPHX. Cody will be posting a lot of those pictures upcoming.
Oh, yeah, I will do. And That's everything. We're actually finishing just on time. So everyone, we hope you have a yep. lovely rest of the weekend. Thank you so much to Pride 48 for letting us come on here. This is our third year doing this, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And hopefully thank not
you
again the last.
For everything you do.
Yep.
And hopefully you enjoyed the show.
Yeah.
With that.
Bye.
Bye.